Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, Inc., based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in Montclair, New Jersey, where it is fall. I'll explain what that is, Troy. If the leaves fall off the... Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Did you hurt yourself? Did you fall down? Okay, on that fun note, let's talk about what's happening with everyone. And I'm just going to lead it off because I'm still laughing over the fall joke. We had fall time. It was like 40. Aww. It was like 42 degrees last night. It was very cold. Still busy. Still lots of projects, lots of shows, lots of travel. You know, it's really, really busy. I mean, this is probably, well, I wouldn't say the busiest. But we are inundated with just tons and tons of projects. Finalized an interactive touchscreen app for use at a trade show. It's very cool. Very excited about this one. It's all authored in PowerPoint, as a matter of fact, so they can do last minute edits and reordering. But it's very, very interactive. Yeah, they put it on a giant touchscreen display for this event. Very excited. I just spent time in Los Angeles with... at a big show, and I was very excited about this show. It's unfortunately the conclusion of it. I won't get to do this one again, but I was working for, you guys know who DARPA is?
Capital
DA?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sandy?
No, I don't.
So
tell me.
So I learned a lot. I mean, I knew DARPA. DARPA is really cool. They're a government agency. Let's start there. They're called the Defense of Advanced Research Projects Agency.
They do all the cool secret like technology stuff.
They are pretty much that. Yeah. Their original mission was they are responsible for the development of emerging technologies for use by the military. You know, backstory stuff. They actually started 1 week after Sputnik was launched. The government said we will never be caught off guard on technology again. So this is a, you know, cool agency. They get given a lot of money and say make cool things happen. But they've kind of expanded their role for use by the military to creating global technology standards. During the opening speech, because this was the final of a three-part challenge. What they do is they put out these challenges. This one was on radio spectrum usage, basically like 5G and beyond, like how do cell phones and all these internet devices do more in the same amount of spectrum space. But the guy doing the intro is great, great. He works for DARPA, but he is a great personality on stage. We also had... we had Grant Imahara from MythBusters. He was like of the he was great. He was the kind of like anchor or co-host for this event. But anyways, DARPA's done a few little things, Sandy. They invented the standards for the internet. They miniaturized GPS so we can have it in our phones and our cars. They created the standards for voice control. So literally every time you talk to Siri or Alexa, they're responsible for it. And they're now the future of radio, or I should say cell phone communication. And it's pretty crazy cool stuff.
Excellent.
So. It's my second year working with them, and it was a ton of fun. The event itself was at Mobile World Congress, which is a very cool event for me because it's all techie, and you know, you get to hang out and go wander around the exhibit floor and talk to people that are talking about the future of things that are way beyond me, but it's very cool.
Nice.
Next week, I'll just end on this. I'm going to go from, hey, I said it was cold here, but I'm going to Dubai next week. So I'm pretty excited.
Oh, very jealous.
I'm not excited for the 18 hours of flying. But
have you been there before?
I have not. That's why I'm kind of excited. I've actually ended up with two extra days. I didn't realize this. I stayed an extra day, as I often do when I'm traveling in, you know, countries or places I want to visit. But I actually have kind of a rest day as well. So I'm going to be a tour. I'm going to go up in the, what's the tallest building in the world?
Yeah,
something starts with an H. Anyways, I'll be a tourist in Dubai for a little over a week or so, and then come home for Thanksgiving.
Nice.
What's happening with you guys? I'm just busy, so I'm assuming everybody else is.
Go ahead, Nolan.
I travel, not going to Dubai, but going to, you know, Detroit and California. You know,
very exotic locations,
like that. So I've been going like back and forth to the east, to the west coast, it seems like, for the last couple of months, and I've got I think three more trips before the end of the year.
Wow,
so a lot of training. A lot of we're finishing up some really large InDesign projects, huge data reports and stuff, which I do each year. And one of them needs to get translated into Chinese right now. So Ooh. I'm actually working, my designer's working on it, my designer who does not speak Chinese. So it's interesting, actually, though, but it's, you know, it's a very visual language. It got translated by a translator, but now we have to fit it into our InDesign. So
you're not responsible for any mistranslations.
Oh no, absolutely not. But but it was interesting because we've been sending things to the translator, and one of the things was, is the leading okay? Like I don't know, sure. Like what like readable leading is on in Chinese characters. So anyway, that's new. I always like doing new things. I had to translate something into Arabic a few years ago. Again, it's provided to us, but then we fit it in. So
fun. That sounds fun.
What do you got going, Sandy?
Well, first I have to commend you for your Halloween costume. It was awesome.
Thank you. We were a little surprised, pleasantly surprised at the reception.
Oh my gosh.
I think everybody that walked in and tried to find Nolan was surprised.
Sorry, so, you laugh so hard right now.
That's okay. We were, my wife and I went, we did a twins themed, we wanted to do a twins themed costume. So we went as the twin girls from The Shining. And I'm sure you can find it. Well, it's somewhere out on the interwebs.
Yeah. It's like, well, I just literally got back from Atlanta this morning, walked into my office, hooked up my recording instruments and sat down and talked to you guys. So I was on
site. Thank you.
Yes. I was on site all last week, this past week, I should say, with a client in Atlanta. We were doing all their I was working with the presenters, helping them get ready for their internal meeting next week. So I was doing the pre-pro work. I get to turn it over this weekend for someone else to take care of the last minute edits and the on-site stuff. What else? Oh, remember I swore I'd never take on another conference.
Yeah, and yet.
Yet. But the same company asked me to work for their, it's another internal meeting. So it's a little bit different than full-fledged hiring keynotes and motivational speakers and all
hey,
that.
Hey, you justify it however you want to.
But it was fun. They're good people to work with. I've been working on a couple of different add-ins with John Wilson. So very varied work. For financial services companies, don't they seem to be the organizations that request it the most? I mean, that's the feeling I get. I rarely have anybody else ask for them.
Financial and pharma. Okay. The only two that ask, maybe they're the only ones with a budget to say we need a custom add-in to make our workflow faster. I don't know.
Okay.
Seems to be.
Yeah, I see. I think you're, at least from my perspective, I think you're right about that as well. I see lots of people interested in it, but yeah, mm-hmm. they never
Yeah,
pull
that's
the trigger.
A good point.
Yeah. But, and then the guild, of course. The guild, it's just going gangbusters. We're so, so excited entering into planning for 2020. So
that is awesome. Very excited to hear about
updated
that.
Updated on that.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing anything in the print world? Because, I mean, Nolan is, and we just finished one.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I am a huge document for a big box hardware company. They wanted it.
Could be
course,
orange, could be blue.
We could be orange, could be blue. Exactly. They wanted something that they could potentially edit. They wanted it to not look like PowerPoint.
Wait, so, if they're going to edit it, are they? What are they working in? What's the end deliverable?
It's deliver. So we're going to deliver it in PowerPoint so that
it is. Okay. So it's a print document. Yeah, PowerPoint document.
Portrait, bound, that, mm-hmm. all of that. They want to be able to edit it potentially, but I think they'll come back to me anyway. But because they can't guarantee the users will be using PowerPoint on their iPads, we are going to be converting it to
PDF.
Okay. So I'm going to have to duplicate. Oh, they also want it interactive. It's highly interactive. Yes. So I'll be doing that in PowerPoint. And then I think I have to reprogram it because I'm using custom shows. I have to start over once I'm in the Adobe product.
Well, the hyperlinks go, but I don't know about custom shows.
They don't return. No. Yeah. There's not a return factor. Okay. It doesn't go through and return. Steve Rinsberg, I'm trying to think of his add-in. He has a pretty cool PDF. It takes interactivity from PowerPoint and kind of helps program it into PDF land. And I've utilized that on past projects. That's pretty funny. We're doing a big project right now where it's turned into a big project, and we're doing a lot of custom shows, and they're very excited. It's basically a trade show loop, if you will, but it's on a like 42 foot wide by 12 foot high screen. It's just basically this huge screen. They're like, hey, we need to fill this with content.
Okay.
And, but they have different, they literally have a timetable of when things run. Like, well, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to basically give you an interactive screen. We're just going to give you a navigation screen. And so we have all these timestamps in there, and it's kind of getting ridiculous. I mean, there's like 40 timestamps for this 2-day event, but they literally, because they don't want to show an event that's already happened. You know, so if a keynote address happened, they don't want to announce it in the loop any longer. So we've just preset all custom shows. Yeah, they, nice. They don't go away. You keep using them. Okay, everybody's busy, right?
We're all busy. Yeah, bottom line.
And the presentation world is busy, so...
Well, let's take a pause and I'll intro it.
Okay.
Okay, introing today's topic conversation is going to be great. We're in November. I mean, November 2019 is almost over. Can you believe this? It's just, I couldn't believe what I had to like sit down and think about that. In addition, I don't know if you guys realize this, October is kind of a crazy month. I mean, October is kind of crazy anyways, but this October was a really crazy month. It had 5 Tuesdays in it. Now, that doesn't happen very often. I'm sure somebody out there that has calendar knowledge can tell us that's very rare, but it means that we only had 2 episodes across 5 weeks. There was a week prior and a week after. So, you know, it's been a while since we've actually talked. I mean, this is our first opportunity to talk since the presentation summit, which was now 4 weeks ago. And the presentation summit was an amazing conversation with everybody. So it wasn't like the 3 of us.
Right.
I mean, yeah, October was crazy. We had so many good things, and it was such a long time for episodes here. So the game plan for today, just so everybody listening kind of knows, is we wanted to go through many of the PowerPoint and presentation topics that have come up over the past month and a half since we've actually had a conversation just among ourselves. So let's just do a quick music stinger, and then we'll race to see who gets the first topic in.
All right. Updates. Mac iOS has a big update, but
and Nolan goes right to the Mac for the first one. Okay.
I'm gonna bring him back.
We don't have to talk too much about the iOS thing, but the big
Catalina.
Catalina, yes, the big Mac update has a new desktop operating system called Catalina. Mm. I don't know what the number is at this point. I have not upgraded. Because there do seem to be some issues with it, not just with Microsoft Office, although there have been a couple reports on that, but there's some issues with Adobe and a lot of other programs. At this, starting with this update, any third-party program that is not 64-bit won't be supported. Mm-hmm. So some people are getting, even though supposedly Apple's been saying, you know, we've been telling the developers, still, there's some, you know, if you have some sort of old favorite, you know, programs that you've used for years that haven't been updated, they won't work.
The analogy of, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. This is the shoe drop. I will say, I need to actually check with our IT manager. I don't know if our Macs have been updated because I don't really utilize them that much. But I believe we adjusted all of our installs earlier this year after we kind of heard Apple do a couple more announcements. I think everything we have is 64-bit just so we're prepared and didn't have to scramble. So we're ready for that one. But I'm sure you have a lot more personalized programs because all of our Macs, they're strictly show computers and they're not, you know, highly...
Yeah, you can Google it under sort of about this Mac, and then there's a place under the about this Mac where it'll tell you what programs are not, you know, available. So you can check that. And I think I do have some older ones that I don't think it's going to be that big an issue. But honestly, I've become a little gun shy of Mac's updates. So I'm just going to hold off. There've already been a couple of, you know, 0.1, 0.2 updates. So I'm just going to hold off for a little bit. So there have been reports that the like color picker doesn't work in Office. So, I mean, these are things that will get fixed eventually, but, you know, not right now. And then there's some sandboxing issues, and again with Adobe there have been a couple issues, so it's just not as smooth an update as some previous ones. So just a warning, if you haven't updated, I have turned off my automatic updates for Mac, I believe.
Well, I need to do that for Windows.
Yeah, there's something going on over there too.
Trouble, right? This last week, of course, I was on site trying to move quickly as presenters came in and I helped them with their presentations. I became unable to, after Tuesday's update, to open my emails via Outlook. So someone sends me an update, I can't open the attachment. Any Office attachment was unopenable.
Did you figure that out? I saw the emails about it.
Yeah. So ultimately, I had to disconnect the protected view for all Office products.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah. So what, and I can't open from Windows Explorer. I do that a lot. I go into Windows Explorer. I like to see the big picture, whatever.
Oh, we do that all the time.
Yeah. And I couldn't open them. So I was able to work directly with Microsoft last night to at least put a Band-Aid on it and help me take care of the Outlook issue. We're still exploring why this happened. For some reason, I only have Office 365 installed, but the start menu shows 2016.
That was the weird one. I saw your email about that. I was like, that is completely unusual because you're using 365.
So it's behaving like there's a conflict between, it's behaving like I have two installations and I only have one. So anyway, that was a nightmare.
We put all updates on hold for design computers and show computers. As soon as they leave the studio, they're not allowed to update. The only update that people will do is Windows Defender definitions. We don't want anything like this to happen while we're on the road. I'd rather be a little bit unsafe, but know that things are going to work. You're like living my worst nightmare of having to look good in front of the client and say, no, really, my computer isn't working for a real reason.
Ugh. Yeah. You know, it's hard when you're like in the hotel room the night before a training and you see that and you're like, oh, let me get my computer ready. Let me restart. Oh, there's an update. Let me just go ahead and do that.
Yep.
I mean, you sort of cross your fingers hoping that
that's exactly what happened to me right before I left it updated.
So sorry.
Okay. So what else, guys? I mean, there's got to be better news than that.
All right. I think there are a ton of features, right? Well, let's jump to PowerPoint. There are a ton of features.
Favorite features, because I've used it now. So it's not. Ultimately, I don't think this is immediately brand new, but it's new to most people, and that's the sketchy lines, the thing that changes your outline to lines.
Yeah, it's a great option.
I love them. Yeah.
I think they're great. I just used them twice when I was at that DARPA meeting. I actually used them to make color. It actually looks like a color. If you make a small, thin box, and then you change it to a thick, sketchy lines, it looks like you created – I was literally making radio waves – it looks like radio waves with a highlight below them because I made the box fill a semi-transparent, actually a gradient semi-transparent. So I created these really cool abstract looking directional wavelengths using sketchy lines. It was like really cool. Otherwise I was getting ready to jump into Illustrator and it's like, well, let me try this. So I did do a mini blog series highlighting them. Well, at the beginning of last month. So October 3 to 7, I did a whole blog post on sketchy lines, but I think they're a cool new addition. They're such a, I mean, they're going to get stagnant like everything. Like, you know, you have an icon like it, but it's a great addition to give you a little creativity.
Now, the only thing I think that they still don't work on are individual lines, right? It has to be a shape.
It has to be a to be a shape. Can't be a line.
Seems really weird. You can't just draw a line and apply it, which you kind of would
be
want
great.
To. Would be great. So maybe that's something that's coming in the future. But
that doesn't know, make a shape.
Yes.
Go to the outline drop down, and there's literally a new thing in there called sketched. Mm-hmm. And because traditionally an outline is just a key line, depending on what program you're using, but it's just a solid outline. This basically gives you four different wavelengths, three different kind of ways of making them hand drawn esque.
One look I like that it creates is that the outline is separated from the fill.
Yeah.
Yes.
It looks like you're using two different shapes, and I think that's very. I don't know. Is it a trendy look or is it just a look?
Probably, but it's definitely.
Well, it's non-PowerPoint. Like it. Anything that looks non-traditional PowerPoint is always going to be a good factor to use for a while.
Yep.
So that's a new one. Another new one?
Replay Ink for PowerPoint.
Love it.
I don't use this too much or haven't yet, but essentially it allows you You draw, right? Either with your finger or a pen. You can draw on a slide, and then you can animate it and replay it as an animation, right? Am I sort of getting that?
Well, it's better than just replay. It shows up on your animation pane. I mean, there is a, under the inking tab, there's a replay. So you can kind of do it there. But this one puts on the animation pane. But the most important thing about it is you can control the speed of it. Mm-hmm. So now it's not, you know, if you do your math equation nice and slow because you're thinking it through, you could speed it up. Or if you guys have time, I have a great example of using this. I was very excited about it. First of all, we should say it is now available to everybody on every version mm-hmm. of PowerPoint, to my knowledge. Oh, is it on the Mac?
I think it just came to the Mac. I need
Okay, so every desktop version. I'm thinking, you know, like the monthly targeted, the whatever the other ones are. I actually had to downgrade a Microsoft a Surface Pro because we're going to use it at a meeting, and it didn't come to our monthly targeted. It only came to the. I'm sorry. What's the really fast build?
Insider fast.
I don't know what's. And so I actually had to downgrade. I had to pull Office off, put a personal edition, which you know I had a couple of licenses for it. So I put it on there, and that's the only way I could get it. So. I'm really excited about this because I'm going to say it's Mark, is it Ridout from Microsoft who is talking about this? Mark, good call out, shout out to you. This is awesome stuff. I've got a video to send to you demoing this. So what I did is I took the tablet for all of the presenters. We had them sign their name and I actually just created a blank presentation. It was like 10 slides, white slides. So they'd have 10 tries to sign their name. Didn't matter how fast they signed it. They just signed their name. Mm-hmm. I then captured it, put it onto their title slide. So Sandy, you'll like this for shows. So, you know, big title slide comes up, you know, the name of their talk, their name, their credentials. And then I had them sign their name at the bottom.
That's fun.
I could slow it down because, you know, everybody signs their name pretty fast. You've been signing it since you were, you know, if you're a guy, you've been signing it since you were 18. If you're a gal, you probably have been signing the fictitious name since you're 12. So I slowed it down. So, you know, it puts their name up there and while their name is animating on, their signature, their name, their handwritten signature is going across nice and slow and just fills out that whole area. It was phenomenal. Works so good. Literally, as far as a value add goes, I told Microsoft, I'm like, I've done this before using a laser light system. So it's actually a laser that kind of basically handwrites the name on there. Not in their exact, it's in their... you know, you vectorize it. So it's their signature, but it's not in the way they do it. So, you know, like I cross my T because I'm left-handed from top right to lower left. I've been told that's wrong, but I'm left-handed. So it's absolutely right. Everybody else is wrong. And, you know, I sign my name in a very distinctive way. So we put everybody's name up there. It was a cool, cool effect. Replay for ink is the only reason we could do it because you can't. Otherwise, I was just going to do videos. I was going to capture them as videos and put them in.
And it is confirmed it is on Mac.
Oh, very cool.
I just want to explain the old way was you could, a signature, for example, you could not make it look like it was realistically being written.
Correct.
You had to break it up and wipe up, wipe from left, wipe down.
Exactly.
It was just a nightmare. So it's just a beautiful, elegant way to, it's just an elegant tool.
It can be, it's a really, really good creative tool. I think it's going to be used for like education, obviously what it was made for, education and things like that, where, you know, a teacher could literally just do the math equation. I'm just using that example once because, you know, I need math equations repeated to me 90 times and then I'll still go, what? But, you know, the math equation could be put in and then, you know, they could literally animate it in as part of their, you know, their tutorial on how to do that. So, but I'm looking at the creative aspects. They're all vector art too. Mm-hmm. So everything you draw is vector. So you can rescale it, resize it, fill it. I mean, you can do a lot.
But it still has a lot of... edit points, doesn't it?
It does. Oh, yeah. Just the ability to rescale, recolor, you know, I don't know if I go into redesigning it because that's, ink replay. It's actually really funny when you go to hit edit points. It's pretty elaborate.
I'd like to talk about ink in just a little different way. I do a lot of online meetings with my clients and I found I was using this actually on site for real-time markup. So a client's presenting or I'm projecting, let's go back to the office, the online meeting.
Uh-huh.
Your presentation is up. We're going through slideshow and we are collaborating. I can take my pen on my touch screen and mark up, change this, you know, lowercase that, do this. It's just a really cool interactive way to show that you're listening to the client and making edits. For future. Cool. So it facilitated my whole editing process this past week on site.
Then you can save all those as a separate.
That's right.
When you hit escape, you hit the save ink. So you have them for reference, but you can
get rid of them so they don't ruin the slide, the actual presentation. That's a very cool idea. Of course, then again, I don't have a Microsoft Surface Studio to work on to do that kind of cool stuff.
I did it on my book as well.
Ooh.
Yes.
I start off a lot of my trainings making a hand-drawn slide or chart, and I always do it on an easel. But I'm thinking, in fact, the last training, I was like, why don't I do this on my computer using a pen and ink? So I'm thinking about maybe doing that.
That'll be impressive.
Very cool. Okay. So ink replay is a good one. Next, we got, I mean, there's like so many things happen. Next thing to talk about.
We'll start ticking them off, right? Presenter Coach is maybe 6 or 8 weeks old at this point. So Microsoft has been sort of releasing all these tools like Designer to make you a better designer, Quick Starter to make you a better, I guess, content writer. And now they want to help presenters be better presenters, speakers. So there's this new tool called Presenter Coach. It is right now only for PowerPoint Online, which means the browser version. Mm-hmm. So you can only use it within the browser version of PowerPoint, but it'll come to desktop eventually. And essentially what it is you go into, you say, I want to use Presenter Coach. You go into slideshow mode and it listens to you and it looks at your content, of course, as well. And it uses the magic AI stuff to give you warnings if you're using like ums and ers and filler words, if you're talking too fast, if you're reading, this is my favorite one, if you're reading, just basically verbatim reading your bullet points or slides.
Yes.
It'll say, that's not interesting.
Oh, I love it.
And then it will also, of course, tell you if you're using offensive language or insensitive or non-inclusive language. And then at the end, when you're done, it gives you this little dashboard of, you know, your metrics and look at this and don't use those filler words and, you know. Don't be racially insensitive to, you know, these people. So it's Gen 1. It's, you know, it's a little, it can be a little annoying.
Great statement there. It's the first generation. I have some missing features, but I know you.
Oh, well, I mean, they're missing features, but also it's a little annoying because it like chimes and it like tells you every time you use an or an which could be a little annoying. But it's there we go. It would have dinged me for my and it also it doesn't catch every. I've just found it a little inconsistent. Like sometimes it catches things, sometimes it doesn't. But it's Gen 1, so I think it's, you know, it's a nice thing to have. Have you played with it at all?
I think it needs a few features to even be called. I'm surprised that a few things aren't in there. I guess I should say, like. How it's timing you, but it doesn't give you that little dashboard doesn't tell you how long you are on each slide. Like that is critical information to me. Like, did I spend too long on this one slide? It doesn't have a report, does it?
Not for that. It does.
It has a whole timeline, but it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't.
It has a whole timeline for how fast you're speaking. What you're saying, I think could be useful, but that doesn't necessarily just because you're spending 3 minutes on this slide and 5 seconds on that slide doesn't mean it's a problem.
When you're looking at your talk and you get done with it, you go, shoot, I spent 22 minutes on my rehearsal. I've got a 20-minute slot. Where can I remove 2 minutes? You can look at how long you did per slide.
Oh, well, I mean,
That pacing thing, it should show you your pace per slide. Like, because that tells you kind of familiarity or you're trying to cram too much into one visual sometimes.
That would be nice, a sort of timeline where you could also see like, oh, I'm using all these filler words on slide 6, which is clearly because that was just written and I have no idea what it says. And I'm
exactly
kind of, you know, making it up.
Yeah. I think that's missing.
Yeah. If you did want, Troy, of course, do want that slide-to-slide timing, you want to use the Jamie's
exactly.
Talk Time plugin.
Are third-party add-ins that do it very well. But it seems like all the data's being captured there. And then also that, why doesn't it give you an exported transcript of the talk given, so you can actually read through it and say, did I really say that? I think that's coming.
I'm sure it's coming at some point.
Have you used it, Sandy, at all, besides the demo we saw?
I haven't, I haven't had a chance to.
It's definitely Gen 1. You know, that whole PowerPoint Online side tangent here, mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the future, at least right now, for new features, because they can roll it out to Microsoft can roll it out to the online version mm-hmm. easier, because everybody, you know, the updates are as soon as they roll it out, everybody's got it. There's no updates. And mm-hmm. two, it gives them more interactivity for a lot of these, they don't use the word artificial intelligence. What are they?
AI.
Algorithm. AI.
Just AI.
Yeah, they have... intelligence services, is that what they call it? Yes. I got to open up PowerPoint and have it give me that annoying statement now.
But, you know, I think it can leverage more of the online needed things instantly. So we're going to see a lot more features that roll out first to the PowerPoint Online like this. And then I guess once they succeed or hit a threshold of use, they'll move to the desktop version.
Probably.
But I think you know, the other one along those lines is the accessibility checker. We just had a call with Microsoft and we talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Now that's not new, but they've added some new features, right?
Coming better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's getting better. That's a perfect way to say it. I don't think it's a brand new, it's not a new feature, but no. With talking with Microsoft, it's definitely getting continuous refinement. And I mean, it's not a big feature for me to use. I mean, accessibility checks not, but I do like, so here's one thing I do really like about this, and I hope the idea carries over. I do like how it leverages the same styling and functionality of the preview pane. So because with accessibility checker, a really big issue was the fact, or maybe this is the new refinement now that I'm thinking about it. The big, you know, it's going to, oh boy, help me out with the accessibility word. It's going to read the screen reader. It's going to read all the content on a slide. Now, Microsoft, a Word document's pretty easy. You read from top, you read to bottom. Sometimes there's an inset or a call out and it has to figure out what order to do it in. Slides can be really chaotic. I mean, you can have a dual column text box, but you divide it into two text boxes because PowerPoint's multi-column formatting is a little bit wonky. You know, how does it know which order to read in? And it now lists in the accessibility checker an order of here's what we're going to read and you can reorder it over there. I thought that was really cool when I saw it. It's like they're leveraging an existing methodology of working within PowerPoint and they're making it so now you can basically do a cool new thing, which is the reordering the screen reader. There's the word I'm looking for.
Screen reader. Now, it used to be that, and Nolan, you did a whole session on this at Summit, so I'm going to turn it over to you to really talk about it, but the previous versions of PowerPoint didn't have the accessibility checker. They used, all they had was alternative text, and you could use that alternative text, and then you had to use an add-in as the reader, I believe. It's been so many years since I've had to do it. What kind of compliancy? It's a government compliancy that some presentations have to meet. What is that?
Yeah, knowing? This is still to address 508 compliance, which is the US law. Other countries have other laws. So accessibility is sort of the umbrella term. 508 compliance is the US version of that certain presentations, you know, government presentations and other things need to apply to. So yes, they have to have alt text. They have to have certain color contrast. And when it comes to PowerPoint, there's some specific things where you want to have headers. Some of the things, you know, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, but some of the things are you have to have, and other things are it is suggested you have. So the accessibility checker will give you things like it'll say there are three different categories, I think, right? It's something's wrong. That's not the right term, but like there's an error, there's a warning, or there's a suggestion, I think. So that just gives you a sense of like you might want, like there might be a genuine reason why you don't want to do a certain accessibility thing. So, and then there are other times where it's like, oh no, you definitely need to.
Yeah. It's mandated almost.
Yeah.
But it's a very cool tool. I think it's gotten some love. So that's new. Definitely not a new tool, but definitely refinement. But the one that's gotten new, the Nolan, I know you're excited about SVG. Yeah.
SVG saving.
Yeah. So finally, so PowerPoint's has accepted for import SVG for well over a year, I think. And all the icons in PowerPoint, those are SVG format. So, but you've never been able until a month or two ago, been able to save out an SVG. So now, well, not only can you save a whole deck as an SVG. So if you do like export as, it'll save individual slides as SVGs, but you can right click on an object, an element, and save that as an SVG. Currently only on the PC, not on the Mac just yet. And also you can't copy something and then do paste special to bring it right back in as an SVG. I would assume that at some point that will come in. So if you want a round trip, you have to take it out and then bring it back in.
And I don't understand that because you can copy. I mean, I do this all the time, but somebody correct me if you think this is horrendous. I go from Illustrator, copy right into PowerPoint, and you get an SVG. Mm-hmm. So it's obviously a back-end engine doing that. Possible. So,
I think they just haven't got around to it in the UI for whatever reason.
I didn't realize you could. I'm actually in the save as, so I'm saving a document here, and I didn't. That's it. SVG is in there, and now I've got to see what that would do if I have like a 20 slide deck.
It's going to create 20 different. It's like
20 different SVGs.
It's like saving it as JPEGs.
Really?
20 different ones. Yeah.
Huh.
So what is this big? We've been talking about it in our group conversations on in email. There's big issues with fonts and SVGs. Is that a Microsoft problem or what's going on there?
Well, what I didn't understand and I still kind of don't understand is this just has to do with the SVG format. SVGs, I don't think by default embed fonts.
I think you're right.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure it's really
I think you have to.
I think you can. I think there are tools that allow you to embed it like a PDF, but I believe that by like in general, if you're an illustrator and you create something with text and then you with a custom font, you would think that since it's like this locked down little like unit of an SVG, when you bring it into PowerPoint, if you don't have that font, you would assume you'd see it, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I don't think. Now again, the SVG is kind of a complicated format. There's a lot of different options and things. So that's my understanding as of now. So if you if you're creating like an SVG to be used in PowerPoint with custom fonts, you probably want to outline the fonts mm-hmm. first before bringing them in.
Which is a little bit of a tricky scenario to do. But yeah, so SVG, I have a blog post because I wrote about it in that same email thread, Sandy, all the way back in 2016. I put a listing of here's our steps for creating SVG. Now I'm going from Illustrator. We're making an SVG in Illustrator mm-hmm. for use in Microsoft products, yeah. PowerPoint, Word, potentially Excel. Here's our best practices because I've been using SVG for other things, you know, app development, web development, whatnot. But we wanted to create our own rules for our internal practices. So all of our designers are doing the same thing. We always outline fonts. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I don't think there's any reason to have a non-outlined font in an SVG graphic. But it gets really interesting. If I create an SVG with some wacky, cool, awesome font, and I send it out to you two or anybody listening, you're going to see like Arial. Yeah. Like, or something, or Wingdings, because you don't have that font. It's just like opening up a slide. When you don't have the font, things just default. SVG seems to default even weirder for its embedded font. So I don't think there's any reason for it to have an editable font.
I think it's odd that it's happening now. All of a sudden, there was this big flurry of activity.
Well,
we've been using SVGs for years. Maybe I've just always outlined and didn't realize that.
People taking stuff from PowerPoint and making them SVG. So now they're authoring them in a different tool using PowerPoint.
I see.
And suddenly, a lot of text stuff is there. And why it doesn't auto outline it seems a little
obvious to me. I always outline it in PowerPoint too.
But, Nolan, to this whole point, because I just now just learned I could actually save a slide deck with as an SVG graphic. All those are, I need those fonts. Anywhere I put that, I'm sure. Or I'm going to use Jamie's tool to first outline them all. Yeah. Then I'll create an SVG of that version. But SVG is huge, huge, cool new stuff.
And you can outline them all using Bright Carbons, Bright Slide. Yes.
Should we talk about?
Yeah. Well,
should we talk about Bright Slide next? Because yeah. Sure. I think that's new.
That is not a PowerPoint feature, but it is a PowerPoint add-in right. That gives you unbelievable features. So yeah, so we learned a lot of us learned about this officially at the presentation summit. Sandy, what's it all about?
Oh my gosh, I have to open it up. Hold on.
Well, wait. Should we first have like the funeral march for UTools going
here?
Well, I still
have it because... in there. I have both. So
I didn't know you could do both.
Oh, don't. You're not supposed to.
I think there's some reason. UTools is no longer, it's still an option. If you have an add-in, it's worth it. But Bright Slide is basically the new and improved version, and it's got a lot of cool new stuff in it.
I lied. I was looking at Tools 2 next to my Bright Slide. Yes.
We have Tools 2. We have Bright Slide side by side.
But so the history is Jamie Garolk, who we've spoken highly of repeatedly on this podcast, wrote this awesome UTools add-in that we all had on our computers, which included one of his more recent ones was the outline option for text. Now Jamie works with and collaborates with Bright Carbon, who's released a very, very, very comprehensive add-in for PowerPoint, including the outline, but things like, oh my gosh, guys, well, what do you use most? I love the typography, adjusting letting or spacing, live character spacing. I mean, I just love that. What do you use?
I have to get it up now.
Put you on the spot.
Let me get
your animations. Troy, you've got to use the animations part, don't you?
I have two favorites. I'll save one to the end because it directly relates to another item. But one of my new favorites is the little selection pane selector. So you don't have to open the selection pane to turn off something. You can literally select an item, and he has an icon there that
says... Where is that?
It's under selection and object. It's right next to the magic wand little icon. It's a little eyeball.
Yes.
It's the same. Literally click anything. And that's the lock one. The one next to it is the selection pane. Of course, now I've locked it, so now I can't undo it. There we go. So we go here.
Do the eyes or the locks?
No, the eyes. Sorry, I clicked the lock. That's what I did. They have a lock tool, which is really, really cool. Yep. I literally can't get back to it. There we go. Yep. The little eyeball. So any object you want to turn off in the selection pane, you don't have to open the selection pane anymore. Select the object. Turn it off right there. So I don't have to open up an extra action pane. A lot of times you got to move stuff out of the way or kind of, I want to turn them off so I can do other design work, or especially when I'm aligning things like, okay, it's snapping to this object. I'm going to turn this object off so I can now slide this over, get it to where I want to, and then I'll turn it back on. So he has basically a shortcut to the selection pane for any object selected. The typography, obviously, just anybody that does line spacing or kerning, just open it up and you can just drag a slider and watch it expand and contract. It's just phenomenal.
Yes.
So I like the theme colors I use. It's funny because some of these tools you might use every day, but a lot of them are the kind of things you use every so often. But when you need them, they will save you like an hour of work. The theme colors are phenomenal. I just used that the other day to transfer, basically go to a new deck and use the theme colors from a previous deck. Guides is incredible. I actually did use the animation thing just the other day.
The one I was going for, animation library.
Do you have a whole... saved animation library like ad hoc?
I am building it up again. We used to use another add-in. I'm not even sure if PPT Extreme is still around.
Yeah, but
best add-in in the world. It was worth the couple $100 because it would let you add, you know, these amazing combined animations. So, you know, I want something to zoom in, spin, and expand, and then bounce at the end. You know, that takes a lot of setup time. And a lot of people have like a library of animations. They'll go and you'll use the animation painter and then go back. The PPT Extreme add-in, I'm not going to say it's totally available anymore because I haven't used it in a while. It was worth it. Used it nonstop. Basically, in BrightSlide, you have the same capabilities. There's a very limited set of custom animations. We're building ours out based on kind of a history of animation. So we'll share ours if anybody wants it in the next month or so.
Your animation library?
Yeah.
Cool.
I would love to.
I want to go back to the theme color option. If you haven't used it for creating custom colors. So, you know, adding to your theme, we always have the theme colors. And then for your for templates where a company has anywhere from 2 to 50 new custom colors that you want them to have access to. He's got that all programmed. Programmed. It's so easy to use.
It's very cool. Yeah. The other thing is, I don't know if you've done it yet. If you've done the load custom colors from a PowerPoint from the file, like you can actually build it on a slide and then say, make these my colors, and it'll populate it for you.
Oh, in this add-in, I've done.
Yeah, I'm kind of simplifying the way it works, but that's pretty much what it is. It's pretty cool when you start using it for custom colors. You know, we actually use the eyedropper tool. We'll pull the, you know, we'll have a PDF of the company's branding. We'll just drop an image of that in eyedropper, a whole bunch of colors. And then when you go into the edit custom colors or anything, you can just say, use these colors, and it kind of auto does it for you.
That is new. Cool. He didn't have that before.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. The theme color thing, not only is it cool, but it's expanded. It's missing one little feature I asked for when we were beta testing. I wanted little dividers between the light darks and the accent colors and the hyperlinks, just to visually see where it is. Jamie, we talked about it. You said your coder could do it. Little hashtags just between them, little lines. So anyways, BrightSlide. And we should also say it is all for the amazing low, low price of...
free.
Free, absolutely free. You just have to register it.
Free. Jamie told me, made me give him $100 word.
Oh, well, that was the side deal for you to get a week ahead.
That was a joke.
Isn't that amazing? I mean,
we need to just hold here because we could talk for the rest of the time. We will have a separate conversation in 2020 all about BrightSlide and making use of its tools.
Great
and
idea.
Hopefully we can twist Jamie's arm into, we'll have to do it in like February or something where it's really snowy out by you, Sandy. Cause we know Jamie doesn't know what snow really is yet. He's still a little kid enjoying it.
We can get together. That would be awesome.
Oh yeah. That'd even be better. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for you guys to get together, I don't want to go out there,
but come on.
So we should point out that BrightSlide right now is only for the PC.
Yes.
I have my fingers crossed that one day it will get created for the Mac. But
oh wait, actually I didn't realize that because UTools was Mac based, wasn't it?
It was not every feature existed on the Mac, but
BrightSlide. Oh, so if you're on a Mac, you still want to make use of UTools?
Yes, and I do.
Well, unless you have Catalina, because that. The sandboxing thing stops most add-ins from functioning.
Does it? Really? Oh, so now
that's another conversation I heard. I have not tested it, but I was told that Mac's new sandboxing for keeping everything safe is going to also prevent a lot of code from working in that realm.
Keeps you safe and unable to do your work. Love it. All right.
You just do it slowly based on the okay.
All right. Have we covered BrightSlide?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, yeah. We got more to cover. We'll do that future. Yeah.
There are two new books on the scene, which people might be interested in.
Two.
Both about data. Alberto Cairo, who wrote The Functional Art and The Truthful Art and some other books, and is sort of just one of the major thought leaders in data visualization. If you don't know him, you should. He's got a new book out called How Charts Lie, which is kind of for the general public. I mean, if you're a data geek, you should pick it up, but it's more about how to read charts as a consumer and how in a sort of political and sociological frame, how they can lie to you in various ways. So that just came out.
The name again?
It's called How Charts Lie, and it has some subtitle.
I'm going to look this up. Hey, before you go to the book number two, because I'm pretty sure I know what book number two about data is, because that's the one I was thinking of. I have not heard of How Charts Lie, but I definitely am going to be going to Amazon ordering it. But I did have a college course where one of the standout learnings, remember, college, 3 degrees, no official math courses. So I took a lot of interesting things. And one was about basically DataViz. Now that I look back on it, I'm like, this was all about DataViz. But one of the key learnings, maybe the only thing I remember from this class, is the professor telling us that data is all facts and he can support any fact you want. It's just a matter of how you display the data. So How Charts Lie. Mm-hmm. Right there from college.
I think there's a infamous book called How to Lie with Charts that's a few decades old. So this is sort of a...
My education's a couple different. Of decades old, too. what's book number two? Because I'm pretty sure I know what this one is.
Book number two is the latest from Nancy Duarte called Data Story. And it is... I'm about two-thirds of the way through it. It is not a... Have you guys read it? Let me put it that way.
No.
I have received and skimmed.
Okay. You haven't read it, Sandy?
No, I haven't gotten to
it. It's not as practical as you might think or tactical as you might think. And, a lot of the DataViz books out there are, here's how to make good charts. So it takes a much more sort of 10,000-foot view, sort of a more, business structural view of using data. It's a little hard to explain, actually, from my perspective. So anyway, just to note, it's good. It's Nancy's a great writer, but it's not quite, it approaches data from sort of a different point of view than you might think than a lot of the other sort of DataViz books out there do. Okay.
You know what I'd like to do? I'm just going to put this out there. Nancy, talking to you. I will talk to you directly. I found at the presentation, some of you are there, you actually heard this conversation, but the way she lays out her books and stylizes them, the 10-inch, was really fascinating to me because it's all authored in PowerPoint and this. I'd love to have her on as a conversation, not talking about her books, but talking about her
style,
her style and her approach to writing books. Because I personally found the whole conversation, we had an after hours conversation, Nancy Skyped in or whatever it was, and it was phenomenal. And I got mesmerized by this whole conversation. So Nancy, I'd love to have a conversation with you about the process of designing and the reason your books are the size they are.
But speaking of charts, there was a recent online discussion about Ivy charts and maybe the shortcomings of their coding. Nolan, yeah. You want to kind of lead this one? Because I know you started the conversation, I believe.
Well, so Ivy charts, if you're not familiar, these are the sort of new generation of charts in Microsoft Office that appeared back in 2016. And I think there are like, what, 5, 6, 7 of them right now. There's like tree map, waterfall, the box and whisker, and a few other things like that. And they, if you've noticed, they don't work exactly the way other charts do. There can be some things locked down about them. Editing them is not quite as easy because they're built with a different engine. So why are we talking about this? Because they're, well, they just reared their heads again.
Well, yeah, exactly. What things have we talked about in the presentation world that Ivy charts have come up in a big way?
So because people want to use them and they want to use them the way they're, the other charts work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are having difficulties doing that because they're hobbled in a way, I guess it maybe is one way of saying it.
I have an example.
What's your example?
I think you and I were kind of talking simultaneously. I introduced a problem and you said, well, wait a minute, are these even being supported anymore? So a client wanted an Ivy chart template in their presentation. I hate Ivy charts, but they sent me an example. Waterfall. Okay. They wanted a waterfall. So when they sent me the Excel document to use as a foundation with example data, I copied the Excel document and placed it in PowerPoint, and it was missing features. I was not able to use destination theme and embed workbook as you do typically when you copy and paste from Excel. We were not able to keep source format and embed the workbook, nor were we able to use the destination theme and link. Basically, you paste an empty, you have no data when you paste these Ivy charts. You can maybe make a few limited edits to the charts.
Safe to say that Ivy charts are far more robust in Excel than other Office products like PowerPoint? I actually don't know the answer because I don't utilize Excel for charting enough.
Not quite.
Okay.
But in terms of getting them from Excel to PowerPoint, there's some issues.
Okay.
I guess kind of what you're saying is kind of true. Because you can edit them more easily in Excel.
That's what I was going for, is that you can actually come up with a lot more like whisker charts, box and whisker are, I continuously go back to Excel when we have a thing with comorbidity rates and whatever, and box and whisker seems like I always end up going back to Excel to edit them there. So Microsoft did tell us, I think this is the important part of what's new news. Microsoft did tell us Ivy charts are not abandoned. They are getting improvements. And the example they gave was the map charts. They have improved matching of geographic locations. I personally haven't utilized that or noticed it, but the bulk of their focus is on making chart functionality work with basically Excel for web. So that's where all the resources are going. So they're not abandoned. They're just not getting, they're really not much better than they were in 2016, in my opinion. Anybody else have anything to say about them?
No, I think there was some great promise with them that we were going to suddenly see all these new types of charts, and supposedly the old charts were going to become Ivy charts and all this stuff. And as I said, it's just they haven't gone anywhere. I mean, with a few from a user standpoint, it doesn't look like they've gone anywhere, even though under the hood, maybe they've been doing some stuff. So again, I still think Excel is way, and Office is way behind, Tableau and other, competitors, even Power BI, which is an internal competitor. So we have hope. We still have endless hope for better charting in Office. All right, let's get off that. What else? We're done with books and features and all that kind of stuff.
Sandy, you want to introduce us to talk about the summit?
Let's recap. We did meet at the summit, and while we were on site, we talked about sessions that we liked and who was presenting, but let's talk about things that we heard and learned at this past summit.
I knew you got my notebook, so many things.
I can start with...
Well, you're working with John Wilson. He had a couple of add-ins that were talked about.
Well, yeah. So I don't use the table animator. I feel really out of the loop on that one. So tell...
I, I feel like it's not. I learned about that one too, but it's kind of in soft release, right?
It's really cool the way it works, but I have a few. So, okay, let's talk about John Wilson's table animator add-in. It basically takes a table, breaks it apart into individual shapes. So every cell becomes its own shape. It puts a shape over each individual cell. That's the background fill, correct?
It basically hides masks.
Yes.
Cells so that you can animate them in by taking away the mask.
Correct.
Animation.
Section. Now, I think that's really cool until you want to print. And if you're printing in color, you can't, you know, if you're playing in black and white, you could just say, hey, don't show these shapes. That would be great. In color, that would be even a greater thing, but you can't. So you'd end up with basically blank charts. So no printout would actually show your data. So it's a really, really cool, fast way to create a way of animating a table that's not animatable.
How did I miss that? I hung out with John the whole time.
It was a really cool, it was like, oh my gosh, that's a great idea. I like, you know, UTools has one that basically breaks a table apart into individual shapes so you can animate them on truly. We use that one quite often, like by the hundreds of tables. And it'll leave a original of the table there and you just turn it off. So it's, you know, selection pane turn off. So you always have something to go back to. But I thought that was a good one. John Wilson also had,
he built one for me. It was so fun. We were just sitting there brainstorming. So I have this very unique need when I'm creating templates on Slide Masters. If you want to have a line associated, say, with the title placeholder, and you want it to be able to move, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So like a bottom baseline.
Steffi has a trick for that.
It's a trick. It's a hack for including that. And what that hack includes is taking the call out placeholder, converting a placeholder to a call out placeholder without borders. And then you're left with the little line that would go from, and you color that and you can move that. You can put it at the top of the placeholder. I use it at the side of the placeholder to separate page numbers from copyright information on my master.
Oh, wait, that's a great idea.
That's the number one use for me. But one of the limitations is you cannot make the line completely horizontal or vertical. So John created an add-in for me that magically I can apply that placeholder or that format to a placeholder and have this nice, neat little tidy.
You're going to have to show me that one because I'm not following it entirely, but I like the idea of what it accomplishes.
Okay. So yeah, I know it's hard to explain. He's just programmed it so I don't have to sit there and putz with making the line vertical or horizontal.
I mean, there was a lot of add-in talk, but obviously BrightSlide was the huge, big one for me. You know, BrightSlide officially released. We've been doing some beta testing with it and this is planned to be a future conversation, so we'll not talk about BrightSlide anymore because there is so much in there.
Right. Gar's going to be at the summit next year.
That is a cool thing.
Yep. Right. The summit will be in Seattle in August.
That's a really cool thing.
A little early this year. So he'll be headlining, keynoting, all that. And yeah, apparently I looked at the hotel online. It's on Lake Washington? Lake something. It looks very cool. It's not downtown Seattle, but it's
I'm excited about that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, it should be nice. There was a lot of guild news, right, Sandy?
Yes. Let's see. I'm the new president. I hate to.
Yay, president!
I'm excited.
Put in a little sound effect there.
Yeah. the presidential march theme.
There you go. Our annual fees have gone up. I think that's a good news thing in that we're getting a lot of traction. Membership, I think I said earlier in this recording.
Well, that's to pay for the new president's salary,
that's
right?
Right. Yeah, right. We're all volunteers. But it is so that we can bring more education, more video, more online events, local events. We're looking at local. We're looking at just being more active and providing more for our members. So, the big deal is the launch of the certifications that came out of Summit. And we will be developing more certifications.
Hey, can you, and I'm putting you on the spot maybe a little here, and I'm gonna ask for not ask for an answer now, but
okay.
Let's see, if they launched in October, would the guild give like a 6 month, at 6 month mark, they say these are as many certified presentationists, you know, how many people have like actually been certified?
Oh, I think we could do that.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think I'd be curious to know if it's like 20 or if it's like 200.
We might plan with people who've succeeded. If they give us permission, I think we're going to publish that on our site because somehow, or it becomes part of their portfolio, because ultimately when corporations are searching for experts or people who have the skills that they need, they can find them on our site.
I think that would be great. I think public recognition is a good thing for that. I mean, so the guild was huge. The presentation summit was huge. We learned a lot. There was some great, great amount of information. I'm going to go back to PowerPoint because I actually got an annoying one I just remembered. And I want to know if this is happening for anyone else. So when I go to create a PDF using the Microsoft PDF, so, you know, export, create PDF/XPS document, which is Microsoft's proprietary way of saying PDF, I believe. Do you guys have like this bright yellow box, like a warning box around the create PDF now that says it's announcing that there's new accessibility options for creating PDFs? Have you seen this?
I haven't, because I'm not on the PC that often.
Oh, I wonder if it's on the Mac. It really bothers me because bright yellow is a warning sign. So every time I go in there, I think I've got a warning and I'd like it to just go away. Like, okay, I've seen this, now stop displaying it.
I don't have it yet.
So I'll put an image there. I'm kind of curious. It's on all of our computers. So all of our builds have it. So,
but yeah, I don't see anything like that yellow pop-up thing.
Oh, well, okay. It's annoying on the Windows desktop. Hey, I got one more timely item. See, and this is maybe an open conversation. Did you guys get the? Well, due to technical difficulties beyond our control, which is basically saying, hey, we're not audio engineers and we have no idea what really happened, but we did lose the last portion of our conversation. And, well, we'll try and get it into the next episode, especially the pro and tech tips. They were great, and I promise you will get those. So sorry about cutting this just a wee bit short. We did have a couple other little things we talked about there, but they are nowhere to be found in our audio files. So, hey, have a great week. Enjoy the design time. We're really excited about the industry. I mean, the presentation industry, the presentation software, the number of add-ins, the support, the recognition, it all just keeps getting better and better. I mean, this is a really, really exciting time to be in this industry. So again, sorry for the technical difficulties of us kind of losing out on a portion of our conversation, but we're happy that you joined us. Thanks for being a part of the conversation, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.